Okay, we're on Daf Lamed Aleph today. Okay, so I'll go over the Gemara from yesterday, and then we'll go on to Lamed Aleph. Okay, welcome, Aaron Moshe. Okay, we're 5 lines from the bottom on Lamed Amud Beis in the Mishnah. Okay, Lamed Amud Beis, and today's Daf largely deals with the status of security. If a goy has security with the Jew, the Jew's got security with which is chametz with the non-Jew. Who owns the security? That's basically the major topic tonight. So if you look at the third very wide line on Lamed Amud Beis 30b, so manita nachrishal vad Yisrael chemzo, if a non-Jew lent money to a Jew, al chemzo, in other words, and the Jew gave chametz as security for the loan. So it was the Jew's chametz. Achar Pesach mutar b'hanah. After Pesach, that chametz is mutar b'hanah. So we don't know this yet, but the Gemara is going to explain that the Jew deposited the chametz with the goy and stipulated to the goy that if I default on this loan, the chametz belongs to you from this date. But we don't know any of that, okay? The Israel shalvat nachri al chemzo. Conversely, if a Jew lent money to the goy the non-Jew's chametz was security for the debt, achar Pesach asur bana. So after Pesach asur bana, because the Jew is viewed as the owner. Okay, that's the basic idea. All right, any questions on the Mishnah? Everybody good? All right, let's see in the Gemara. Now the Gemara is going to take up moving away from chametz, subject to connection with our Mishnah. All right, so it says 3 lines from the bottom. Gemara itmar bal chov abayimar lamafreyu who gove ravamar mikan lahabu who gove. If a person is a bal chov is a creditor. Though I mentioned to you that in Hebrew sometimes bal chov can be a debtor, but here it means a creditor. So if a person is a creditor and he seizes security, so Abaye Bar Lamafrehu Gova. Abaye says it's like retroactive to the time of the debt. We'll see in a minute. Rabba Marmi Kanal Haba Hu Gova. Rabba says it's from this point forward. So the Gemara explains, Kul Hecha de Akti Shlova Vizabin Lova, Kuli Amalo Pligi. So if the Lova, is somebody not muted? Oh, Ruth did this. Okay. Let me go. Okay. So wherever the Lova was makdish the property in question or sold the property in question, Kuliamo Pligi the Atimalva Vitarif Vati Malva Parik. So everybody agrees that the Malva's rights, the creditor's rights, supersede. In other words, the Lova, you know, starts getting generous with his security. You know, he decides he's making a big contribution to the Beis HaMikdash. Or the Lova decides he's going to sell it. But that's the security for the loan. So if that happens and he defaults on the loan, so everybody agrees, meaning both Abaye and Rav agree, that the Malva, the creditor, can come and can seize it from the purchasers, and he can come and Abati Malva Parik, he can redeem it from Hekdesh. So when we say redeem from Hekdesh, it means, let's say he lent $100,000 and the collateral was worth, you know, $90,000. So he can redeem that property from Hekdesh for a token amount. He has to give something because he can't take property out of Hekdesh. They don't want people to think the property goes out of Hekdesh without paying something. He says on the top line, Laman Aleph, Amad Aleph, did not, because we learned in the Mishnah, Erechin, Mosif O Dinar, Upozet Nechasim Eilu. Like the creditor has to add 1 dinar and redeem the Nechasim. Ki Pligi means Abai Barab, their machloket is Zavin Malva, Kaddish Malva. Let's say the Malva. In other words, the Malva lends money on February the 1st, and it's secured by property. And then the Lova defaults, the debt is due on March the 1st, and on March the 1st, the debtor defaults. But let's say between February the 1st and March the 1st, the Malva, in anticipation perhaps of the debtor's, you know, defaulting, he sold the property or he declared it to be Hekdesh. So is that a valid sale or not? He says, Abayamar and the Mafreyuhu Gove. So Abaye says, we view it as retroactively, it was the Malva's property. Came into Montezmani below Pare. Once the time comes, in my example, March the 1st, and Lova didn't pay, Iglai Milton Mafreya, d'miikara birshutei habakoi. So then it became revealed that retroactively, as of February the 1st, it had really been the malva. We'll call the malva Reuven, we'll call the debtor Shimon. So it was really Reuven's property. B'shapir aktiv shapir zabin. So he had effectively been makdish it, or he had sold it. And those were effective transactions, according to Abaye. V'rava amar, mikan lahaba hu govim. Rava says, no, everything is mikan lahaba. And nothing takes place before March the 1st. He says, came into ilu havu lei zuzei, have masalik lahu bezuzei. So since if the lova had money, he could, you know, get rid of the malva and say, here's the money, I don't want anything to do with you anymore. He says, ishtakach tahashta kukani. So it comes out that now he's acquiring the property on March 1st. So it means if on February the 15th, Reuven the malva was makdish the property, so according to Rava, that he can pull out of it because it really wasn't his property until March the 1st. So it's a non-entity. Okay, so again, so leaving aside the halakha of the Mishnah, we'll come back to the Mishnah with the chametz, with the Jew and the non-Jew later on. We're focusing on a different issue now, but related, is whether a Baal Chov, when is he, is he Lamafreya who gove and we kind of Lahaba who gove? Do we view his like his rights in the property retroactively, or do we view Mikan Lahaba? So Bai says the Mafreya, and Rabbi says Mikan Lahaba. Okay, who's a question, comments, thoughts, anything that is so far? Everybody good?
So far, this is still what we did last night.
Right. It's Chazara. Okay. So now moving on. All right. Okay. So the Gemara.
Could you just repeat what you just said?
All right.
I said, so far, this is just what we did last night.
No, yeah, no, I heard what you said. I was asking if...
You mean you want me to repeat? Okay. No, so
review.
I just reviewed for the last 5 minutes, but I'll review again. Okay, we said that if you have a Baal Chov, a creditor, and he lends money, Reuven is the Baal Chov, he lends money to Shimon. So let's say he lends money on February the 1st to Shimon for $10,000. It's due on March the 1st, and it's secured by collateral. So then if between February the 1st and March the 1st, the Malva sells the property or he's makdish the property, does he do an effective sale or an effective, is he makdish it? So according to Abaye, if indeed Shimon the debtor defaults on March the 1st, then the actions of Reuven were effective on February 15th. But according to Rava, no matter what happens, it's not effective because Mikan Lahaba who go there. Okay?
Yeah. Okay. And you did do this yesterday.
All right. Okay. All right. I'm moving on. Okay. Everybody, let's all focus. All right. Now, so we're on the eighth line, Laman Aleph, Amad Aleph. All right. So Amar Rava, he says, Umi Amar Rava Hachi. Did Rava really say this? So Rava is the one who says, Mikana Lahaba who gove it. Did he really say that? Now we're going to bring, it's a long, complicated case. We're going to try to prove that Rava holds Lamafreya who gove. Okay, so Rava says Mikana Lahaba who gove, but we're going to try to prove that he says the opposite. Vahama Rami Barchama. Rami Barchama said, Reuven Shemacharsa de Shimon Bachrayot. If Reuven sold Green Acre to Shimon Bachrayot, Achrayot means like a type of title guarantee. In other words, he sells him the property. He says, if one of my creditors comes and seizes the property from you, I will compensate you for it. Okay, that's so he sells the Bachrayot, who's Kafan La Bemilta, in addition to which he sold Greenacre on credit. In other words, so let's say Greenacre is worth $20,000. So Reuven sells Shimon the property for $20,000, and Shimon writes him an IOU note. So Reuven doesn't get any money back. And at the same time, Reuven has creditors floating around. All right. So he says, now here it comes out that Shimon is both a debtor and a potential creditor, right? Shimon is a debtor to Reuven because he owes him the money. But if the property is seized from Shimon, then Reuven owes him the money for it. So in that sense, he's a creditor as well. Okay. Who made Reuven? Then Reuven, the seller, he dies. And then Reuven's creditor comes and attempts to seize Greenacre from Shimon. And then Shimon says, don't take Greenacre. I've fallen in love with the property. Here's $20,000. So now left to our own devices, we would think it's like no harm, no foul. In other words, he owed Reuven $20,000 for Greenacre. Reuven's dead now, but then Reuven's creditor comes and wants to take away the property, so he pays the creditor. So I think, well, all solved. You know, instead of owing Reuven, he paid him. Gone. You know, that's what I would think. So two lines above where it gets wide. Dina hu da'atu b'nei Reuven. The halacha is that b'nei Reuven, the yorshim of Reuven, can come, but amri le the Shimon, can say to Shimon, the buyer, anan matatle shavak avun gabach. Our father had matatlim in your possession. Matatlim means the money. In other words, you owed our father $20,000. Those are matatlim. You owed him $20,000. Umatatle yat me the baal chov lo mishtabde. Now, those matatlim are not meshubah to any baal chov. In other words, if you have the estate of someone who dies, so only the real property is subject to collection from creditors, not the metaltalin. So you, I don't know why you paid the $20,000 to this, you know, one of our creditors is what you did. You paid the money, but that's your own affair. Meanwhile, but we would like the $20,000. Okay, now Adkan is the complicated case. Now the first wide line, but I'm a Rava. Now Rava is the one that we thought is going to be the stira. Rava says, Mikan lahaba hugova. But I'm a Rava. Rava says, Ipikech Shimon. This is really the part that you need. This is the way Rabbi Sobolovsky was saying. It's really like the next two, three lines. But I'm a Rava. Ipikech Shimon. If Shimon is shrewd, he says, Megabilu Ara. So he should give the Yorshim the land back. In other words, he'll give, I owe you $20,000. Here's Greenacre. Take the land back. He says, Vahadar Gabilu Aminayu. And then he'll take the land back for himself. In other words, I owe you the land because I owe you $20,000. So here's the land. Now you have karka, but that karka, your father owed it to me because I have the claim that he was supposed to, you know, pay me back for any claims I have, but that any claims that anybody had against me that from, you know, his creditors. Why the Amar of Nachman? Rav Nachman says in the second wide line, Yitomim shagavu karka b'chovet aviyem, that if Yitomim collected karka as a debt of their fathers, and the father was a creditor, b'alchov chozer v'govo tamehen, that a creditor can come and seize the land from them. So just 1 minute, I'll come. Just give me a few minutes, okay, and I'll pause. Just wait 3-4 minutes. Just everybody take a piece of paper out, write down the questions, okay? So he says here, So a creditor can come and seize it from them. So if here in this case, in essence, you, the Yorishim, are seizing karka because it's owed to the estate, but now the karka is owed to me. Now, Adkan is what Rava says. So now the Gemara clinches the question. He says, Iyamit b'shleim al mafrei hu gove, if I'll assume, not, we assume that Rava says, mikan lahaba hu gove. But Rava says this is an Eitzah for Shimon. So that Eitzah makes sense if Rava holds the Mafreya who gove. Am tu lahachi chozer v'gova tamehen. Then he can collect the karka back from them. Why? To command the gavu mechayim da'avu on dami. In other words, it's like the father had collected the property during his lifetime. So it was part of the father's estate. And then he's a creditor of the estate. He can seize the land for it. That makes sense. If it's the Mafreya who gove, if it's going retroactively. In other words, he's like a Baal Chob. He's like a creditor to the estate. So if it's working, let me go back. I didn't say right. In other words, if the Yorshim, wait, give me one second. All right. Right. I mean, I didn't say that. Scratch the last sentence. In other words, the Yorshim, when they seize that property, they're seizing it retroactively. When they're seizing the property, they're taking it back retroactively. It's like the property was always theirs from the time of the debt. So now that property is like belonging to the father. Let's go back. So he says, it's like that property was in their father's estate when he was alive. Eli Amrit Mikan Lahabu Hu Gove. But if you say that when a creditor seizes property, it's only his property, Mikan Lahaba, like from this point going forward, she says, Amai chozer begovo tamihen. How can the Shimon come and seize the property? Ahavi kaman dezavin yatmi nichsei dami. It's like the Yitomim, they now went out and purchased new land. V'ilu kani yatmi nichsei. If the Yitomim go and buy land, mi kamishabit the Baal Chov, are they, is it meshuba to the Baal Chov? Okay, let me just pause for 1 second, right? So again, so you got to, it's like you got to see the forest from the trees with this whole thing. So again, so Rava held a Baal Chov, a creditor, is Mikana Lahaba who gove it. From the time that he seizes it, that's the property belongs to him. So the Gemara has this complicated case where Rava says, it's a, my Eitza is, you had Reuben sold the land to Shimon, and then Reuben also guaranteed the land to Shimon, and then Shimon owed the money to Reuven. So Shimon paid off the Reuven's creditor. So now the Yorshim want the money from Shimon. So Rava says, my Eitza is that Shimon should give the land, let them take the land in satisfaction of the debt. Let the Yorshim take the land, and then he'll come and claim land from them. Now the only thing that he can claim from the Yorshim is real property, and real property that owned to the father, that belonged to the father. That's his limit of his rights vis-a-vis an estate. So if when the Yorshim sees the land, it's the Mafreya who gove it, it's like retroactive from the time of the debt. So they're seizing this land, going back to the time of the debt. So then it's as if the land belonged to the father during his lifetime. And then Shimon has a right to seize the land back. But if it's Mikana Lahaba who gove it, if when the Yorshim are seizing the land, it's as of this date, so that's like a new transaction. So that's the Kash against Rava. Let me have 2-3 lines and I'll pause, okay? So the Gemara wants to prove that Rava really holds the Mafreya who gove, which is not the way he said he holds. So the Gemara says, no, Rava really holds Minkana Lahaba who gove, but let me say this outside first, then we'll go back. The Gemara is going to say, let's say, you know, C owes money to B and B owes money to A. So A is the creditor of B and B is the creditor of C. So it's like C owes the money to A. In other words, so B is not part of the equation. It's like C owes money to A. So you don't have to get involved with this whole thing with the Yorshim. It's going to come out. In other words, Shimon owed something to the estate, but then the estate owed money back to Shimon. So it's like the estate is like not involved in it. And in other words, we're not worried about this estate. It's like, we'll see in a minute. Okay, so the Gemara says on the 8th line, Shani Hatam. So the Gemara says, no, that's a different case that Rabbi was talking about. The Amar Luhu, because Shimon can say to the Yorshim, Kiechi de Mishtabana Leila Vuchon, just like my property was mortgaged to your father, I owed a debt to your father. He says, Mishtabana Nami, Labal Chov Davuchon. That same property is Meshubad to the creditor of your father, which is me. In other words, you had a claim. In other words, you have a claim against me. In other words, because you claim that I owe money to the estate. So you're coming to seize this property. But then I have a claim also for the property, because in essence I'm a creditor of the estate. So we don't have to get involved with this estate at all. We could just say, in other words, it's again, it's like C to B and B to A. So it short circuits the whole thing. He says, "Meet Rabbi Natan for Rabbi Natan's din." Titania, Rabbi Natan Omer, "Minayin lano shebachaveru mana vechaveru bechaveru." How do we know that if A is claiming a mana 100 zuz from B, and B is claiming 100 zuz from C, shemotzi mizeh v'not nim lazeh? We take from C and we give to A directly. Tamalomar v'natan la asher shamlo. So this pasuk is in Parshas Naso. The Pshuto Shemekra means if somebody steals from somebody and then he admits that he stole, so he has to pay back the person that he stole from. But the phrase in the Pasuk is, he doesn't say, you know, the person that he took the money from is Lasher Shamlo, like where the principal is. So that if he stole from B, but B owed the money to A, he'll pay it directly back to A. Okay. Let's just summarize again, and then we'll take some questions, comments, and thoughts. Okay, so it's like with this Daf Yomi, you can easily get lost in the forest with the woods and everything, but you just got to keep your eye on the main thrust. Okay, so we had a machloket between Abai and Rava. If you have a Baal Chov, when a Baal Chov is it the Mafreya who gove or Mikana Lahaba who gove? If the Baal Chov, the creditor, is collecting security and satisfaction of the debt Do I say that he was the owner of that security as of the date of the debt, or is he the owner of the security from the date that the borrower defaults on the loan and then he seizes the property? Okay, that was the basic machloket. So Abaye says, L'mafreya hu gova. Abaye says it's all retroactive, as of the original date. And Rabbi says, no, mikana lahava. Okay, that's the first part of today's daf. Then the Gemara said, did Rabbi really say mikana lahava hu gova? We had this case with the Yorshim and, in other words, Reuven, who dies, who had sold property to Shimon, and then Reuven's creditor sees the property from Shimon, and then the Yorshim come and say, you owe us the money. And then Rava suggests that Shimon give them property in satisfaction of their claim, and then come and seize the property back. So Shimon is all at once. Shimon is a debtor and Shimon's a creditor. So we thought it only made sense if I say the Yorshim are l'mafreya hu gova. If the Yorshim, when they collect this piece of property, is like going retroactively as of the date of the debt. So then it's part of like their father's, it was their father's property. And then I understand that, you know, if the father had property, then it's subject to all claims against the estate. And so then everything makes sense. If I'm afraid who go, but mikan lahaba who go, but we didn't think it made sense. So the Gemara in the end says, no, we don't need to get into the vibe with the estate, mikan lahaba. In the Akinami, Rabba holds mikan lahaba. In this case, the estate is like out of the situation. It's like C owes money to B and B owes to A. So it goes directly from C to A. So here, C and A are all like the same person. It's Shimon. So Shimon owes the money. He owes the property to the estate. And then the estate owes the property back to him. So it's like goes directly to him. So you don't have to get involved with Mikan Lahaba Hugova or Lamafreya Hugova. It just goes strictly, you know, from C to A. All right, now it's time for questions, comments, and thoughts. Okay, now everybody scream, yell, go ahead.
No, I got lost in the forest here. Did the Yorshim have to take the karka, or they can hold out for the money?
No. That was what Rava was suggesting. Rava says if Shimon is shrewd, he should say, why don't you take this property? And then
taking advantage of the Yorshim.
What can
the
I
Yorshim
tell you?
Were smart, then oh. The Yorshim would say no. If you all right. give me property,
okay.
Then,
all right, okay.
And then
okay.
The whole thing falls apart.
Right. Okay. That's it. Okay.
The Yorshim don't have a claim to an IOU. That's Metaltolin, right?
So the
Shimon wouldn't have the claim to the IOU from the Yorshim. That's what you're saying.
Wait. The
Reuven's Yosomim can't seize Shimon's IOU.
No. Shimon still owes them the money. In other words, there was a shtar from Shimon to Reuven.
Yeah, but the Yosomim can't.
When Reuven dies, all of his debts are not released.
Yeah, he has got to pay.
In other words, if people borrowed $1 million from Reuven, then he dies. It doesn't mean they all have a party that they lose it. It just means that a Baal Chov, if somebody's a creditor against the estate, if somebody's a creditor claiming money from the estate, they can only look to the real property. But the estate itself can collect, okay? All right.
So Yorshim shouldn't do it.
It's not, no. Okay, who's any other questions, comments, thoughts?
I don't understand how Shimon could get the land back after he gives it back to the Yorshim.
Again, Shimon is a creditor and a debtor, right? He's a debtor because he owes to the
land.
Estate, but he's right. Also a creditor because
he paid the debt?
No, because Reuven guaranteed him against anybody who would be a claimant against him. So in that sense, he's a creditor. So he's invoking that arrangement. All right. Any other questions, comments, thoughts? Okay, I'm moving on. All right, let's go back to our regularly scheduled program, which is comments on Pesach.
We didn't yell.
What?
We didn't scream.
Okay. All right. Let's take a look. All right, now we're on Lamed Aleph, Lamed Aleph. Okay. All right. Okay, so we're around 8 lines from the bottom, the word Tanan. Okay, Lamed Aleph, Lamed Aleph, 31A, around 8 lines from the bottom. Now, back to our regularly scheduled program, our Mishnah. So Tanan, we learned in so basically we're at square zero. So we have the Machloket Abaye V'Rava, and Rava, again, Machloket Abaye V'Rava, 99% of the time the luck is like Rava. And Rava says that it's Mikana Lahaba. So that's the one we want to focus on. So he says, Tanan, we learned in our Mishnah, Nachri Shehovat Yisrael Chemtzo, if a non-Jew lent money to a Jew, and the security was the Jew's chametz, he says, Achara Pesach Mutar Bana. The Mishnah says that after Pesach, the chametz is Mutar Bahana, meaning that presumably we view the chametz as belonging to the non-Jew, even though that was the security for the dead. So we don't know what the facts are yet. I told you based on the maskana what it's going to be, but we don't know anything yet. So Iyamit Bishlem Lamafrehu Gove. So the Gemara assumes if I'll say that when a creditor collects, he's collecting retroactively, and the debt we'll assume was before Pesach, Amtu Lahachi Mutarbana. So then the Mishnah makes sense. So according to Baye, we think the Mishnah is making sense. In other words, the Yisrael defaulted on the loan, the Goy seized the chametz and satisfaction alone, and he's seizing it retroactively before Pesach. So it's mutar bana. Eliam mikan lahabu gova, but he said like Rava that it's mikan lahabu is just going in the future. He says amai mutar bana bershuta d'Yisrael havakoi. It was bershuta. We assume the chametz was staying with the Jew. We assume the Jew had 1,000 barrels of beer. And he says, I need to borrow, $10,000 from, or $1,000 from Ivan or Ignatius. And he borrows it. And he says, if you have problems, you come, you seize the beer. So if I say it's the Mafrehu Gova, so it's not Chamit Shabar Lava Pesach, Mikan Lahaba, it should be Asr Bana. So the Gemara says if it's Mikan Lahaba, so the comments was with the Jew over Pesach. So the Gemara says, Hakamai Askinan Shirahino Etzlo. So the Gemara says, no, the case that the Mishnah is talking about is the Jew deposited the chametz with the Goy. So he brings it from his, property over to the Goy's property. So we think right now that when he does that, that turns it into a mashkon, and a Baal Chov is called a mashkon. A Baal Chov has rights in the mashkon. Okay, so the Gemara is going to, give more details with this, but right now it's coming out that the Jew brought the mashkon, the chametz, over to the non-Jew, and the non-Jew's holding it for Pesach, all right? And so even if I say mikan lahaba hu kona, we think that this is different. In other words, Baal Chov is mikan lahaba, that's not when hirahinu etzlo, but if it's hirahinu etzlo, so then he's kona right away. That's what we think. Hirahinu etzlo means he deposits it with him. So the Gemara says, Lema Kitanoi, should I say that this aspect, this machloka between Abai and Rava, tracks the machloka Tanoi? He says, the Bryce, now according to Bryce, Yisrael shalvah l'nachri al chemtzo, if a Jew lent money to a non-Jew, al chemtzo, with the chametz as the security, he says, l'char pesach eino over. So if he gets hana'a from the chametz after Pesach, he does not transgress. Mishum Rav Meir Amru Over, but in the name of Rav Meir, they said he does transgress. So again, a Jew is lending money to a non-Jew. The non-Jew is giving the Jew rights to seize the chametz. So according to one Tana, the chametz is mutar bahana after Pesach, and according to the other one, it's not mutar bahana. So he says, "My la b'hakimiflgi, is it not that the Tana Kama and Rav Meir are mechulak on this issue? Demar Savar the Mafrehu Gove, that Rav Meir says that you're over." He holds the Mafrehu Gova. So when the Jew seizes the chametz, it's as if the Jew owned it from before Pesach, and now it's a din of chametz shavar lava Pesach. That's like Rav Meir, and that would be the Mafrehu, that would be like Abaye. Umar Savar, whereas the Tana Kama, who says you have no problem with getting hana from the chametz, Mikan Lahabahu Gova. He's holding no, it's just from this date forward. So it's mutar bana because it belonged to the goy during Pesach. That's what we think. So if that's the correct interpretation of Braisa, the machloka between Abai and Rava is really machloka between the Tana Kama and Rebbe Meir, right? So Rebbe Meir holds like Abaye and Rava holds like the Tana Kama. So the Gemara says Vatisbara. Does that Hesber make sense? Ema Seifa. Let's go to the Seifa of the Braisa and see if our explanation in the Reisha worked that well for the Seifa. The Seifa says, "Of al Nachri Shoval Yisrael al Chemtzo, if a non-Jew lent money to the Jew in return for security in the Jew's chametz, lachar Pesach divrei kol over. After Pesach, everybody agrees that you transgress from getting any benefit from that chametz. So here in this case, we view it according to everybody, I mean, Sai the Tanakhama, Sai Reb Meir, as apparently belonging to the Jew during Pesach. So we would have expected that the holding in the Sefer would be the reverse of the Reisha. In other words, the Reisha case was where we had the Jew lent money to the non-Jew, and the Sefer case is the non-Jew lends money to the Jew, so I'd expect the opposite. Laman damar hatam einu over, that the one who said above that that you're not over, you don't transgress. Now that case was that was where the Jew lent money to the non-Jew, so you don't transgress because, in other words, it belonged to the borrower, hacha over. So I think that here, if it belongs to the borrower, here the borrower is the Jew, so it would be over. Laman damar hatam over, the one who says that you are over there, that belongs to the lender, hacha ain't over. Here you're not over, but the price is everybody agrees that you are over if you get benefit from it. So the turn page, the top line, laman alfon beis, el hacha meyaskinan. So the Gemara says, what are we dealing with in the price? Gagon shehir hino etzlo. That again, we get into this topic, which is what we said was the case in our Mishnah, where the chametz was brought over to the lender's house or to the possession. The kamifla gibi the Rabbi Yitzchak, and the machlok between the Tanakam and Rabbi Meir turns on Rabbi Yitzchak's holding. The Amar Rabbi Yitzchak said, minayin lebal chov shkon mashkon. How do I know that a bal chov, a creditor, acquires rights in the mashkon, in the collateral? Shenemar lechatz yitzdaka. He says that if you, like, in other words, you lend money, in other words, in Parshas Mishpatim, one Jew lends money to another non-Jew, and then the lender seizes, like, the nightclothes of the borrower as mashkon. So the Torah says, he'd return him the nightclothes at night, let him have his nightclothes, so he could sleep in his pajamas or whatever speak. So if you do that, you'll be doing, like, staka, you did a chesed, you know, geikuzot ahed. He says, "Im eino kona mashkon stak minayin." So if he's not the owner, what's the tzedakah? In other words, so it's only if I own it that I'm doing tzedakah. Otherwise, I'm giving back the property that he belongs to him. Im eino kona mashkon stak minayin mikan lebal chov shkona mashkon. So we see that bal chov is kona mashkon. Now, Tanakama savar hani mil Yisrael mi Yisrael hu dekarina bei ulachat yetzedakah. So Tanakama holds the malva is only kona mashkon if one Jew lends money to another Jew. And it's turning on the issue when the Torah is saying, ulachat yetzdaka, like who does staka? In other words, Jew giving to another Jew, that's an act of staka. So there the Torah is mezaka, the lender, that is his. He says, the karina be'ulachat yetzdaka, val Yisrael minachri lo kani. But, give me one second. One second. Right, but when the Jew takes the mashkon from a non-Jew, he's not kona the mashkon. Remeir savar, so he says Remeir savar kavachomer Yisrael kani. If a Jew from another Jew acquires the mashkon, Yisrael mi nachri lo kol shekain. Okay, let's go slowly with this. So we'll just do the ratio part, and then we're going to continue on. Now, in the beginning of the brisa, this was on the previous amud. So the first case was Yisrael shalval nachri alchem. So the Jew is the lender, and he takes the non-Jew's chametz. So does the lender acquire that chametz or not? So that's talui with this machloket. So the Tanakama holds that he's not kona. The Tanakama holds he does not acquire the chametz because the malva does not acquire the mashkon. So the mashkon still belongs to the non-Jew. Whereas Remeir holds no. That it does belong to, to the Jew. So Meir says over. So the Jew having acquired the chametz, you can't get hana from it after Pesach. Now let's take a look. The Meir sabar kavachomer Yisrael kani. If in other words we assume that the rights of a Jew are going to be superior vis-a-vis a non-Jew than they are with a Jew. Yisrael kani Yisrael nachri lekol shkein aval nachri shovat Yisrael alchemto. But if the non-Jew lent money to the Jew, Achar Pesach Devrei Kol Over, everybody agrees that the non-Jew, the Gentile lender, does not acquire the mashkon. Hatam Vadai Nachri Yisrael Lokani. There he does not acquire it. Okay, so again, what are the ownership rights vis-a-vis the mashkon? That's really what we're talking about, the ownership rights vis-a-vis the mashkon. So we say, A, we're talking about here, Hino Etzlo, that he left the mashkon. He left the chametz in the rishus of the lender. Under those circumstances, does the lender acquire like a title in the mashkon, in the Baal Chov Kona mashkon? So if it's a Jew with a Jew, so he's definitely Kona, but what if it's a Jew with a non-Jew? So when the Jew is the lender, so then we have a machloket whether the Jewish lender is Kona the mashkon with a non-Jewish borrower. So that's the, so if he's Kona, so then there's going to be an issue of Chametz Shavar Lav Pesach. If he's not Kona, there's not an issue. That was the beginning of the Mishnah. Okay, when the Jew lent money to the non-Jew. In the Sefer of the Brisa, the non-Jew lent money to the Jew. So there, nobody says that the non-Jew acquires rights in the Mashkon. So there, the Chametz definitely belong to the Jew. Okay, that's where we're up to so far. Okay, what's up? Okay, questions, comments, thoughts. Go ahead.
How do we have two sets of legal standards when they're depending on who the parties of the transaction are?
I mean, we have it all the time in halacha with Jews and non-Jews. You know, it's like, you know, like your shore gor is a shore, is it, whether you go Jewish on shore or non-Jewish on shore, it's different halacha. You know, you like we have it's all over the place in halacha. There's a difference in between, you know, you lend money to a Jew, you can't take interest. You lend money to a goy, you can take interest. There's all over halacha. There's a difference between.
I understand that because you're not allowed to take ribbit from another Jew.
Right.
But here, this is an issue of title.
Right.
This is a matter of law.
Yeah, well,
so how? I mean, I think I'm bringing my secular mind to this, and that may be the problem.
Yeah. So it seems like it's focusing on this pasuk ulachat yetzdaka. It sounds like if it's somebody that like in other words, if you're doing like an act of tzedakah with somebody, so then that becomes yours. If you're not in a position where you could do an act of tzedakah, so then it may not become yours. That's what it seems like. All right.
Do the Gayim know this sugya?
I don't know what to tell you. There's a whole. I told you there's a whole sugya. Where is it in Sanhedrin? Where, like, you remember where, like, the Romans, like the Yamshel Shlomo, the Marshal, he brings this down. Remember where they sent like undercover agents to listen to what the Jews were teaching Torah, and they said we agree with everything except what you said about like the non-Jew with
the Romans.
I think I can't remember. So the Marshal says. Like, so why didn't they change the halacha? Why didn't they deceive the non-Jews? So the halacha is something else. The Marshal says, it's yeharig b'al-yavur to like falsify what the Torah says. All right, anyway, let's go on. Okay, I'm going to move on. Okay, now, all right, we're putting together the pieces in this puzzle. All right, now let me keep moving. All right. Okay, now, so I'm up to Tanan, okay, around 10 lines down. Last word in the line is Tanan, all right? So now we come back to our Mishnah. So, one second. Right, so we said the... So we said the Jew does not acquire rights in the non-Jews collateral, right? The Jew does not acquire. Let me see back again. Remeir says that you are Kona, right? Well, Nachri Shavat Yisrael Alchem So Har Pesach the non-Jew, right? I don't know why he says here in the art scroll, he says on the top line, where according to opinions, the Jew does not acquire the security of a Gentile. Let's see what we have here. So Tanan, we learned the Mishnah, Nachri Shalva et Yisrael Alchem So. Right. So it's talking about where the non-Jew lent money to the Jew over the Chavrei, right? So if, in other words, everybody agrees if a non-Jew lends money to a Jew, the non-Jew does not acquire rights in the Chametz that we said. But now let's go back to our Mishnah. So Nachri Shalvat Yisrael Alchem So. Achar Pesach Mutar Bahana. So after Pesach, that Chametz is Mutar Bahana. So Nihi Nami Dir Hinu Etzlo. So in Achinami, the Jew deposited the Chametz into the Rishus of the non-Jew. He says, Amrit Nachri Mistrel Lokani. But we said that a non-Jew does not acquire. I think I think they messed up the. Does your introduction article say the same as mine? 31B2.
Yes, it says it emerges that according to all opinions, a Jew does not acquire the security of a Gentile.
Yeah, it should be the other way around. The Gentile does not acquire the security of the Jew. It should be right.
But it would be better for us for halachic purposes.
Yeah. Okay. But I'm saying I think they made a mistake in the art scroll.
And we should be able to monkey around to get it to be that way. So
Mine says the right way. Oh, so it was corrected later on. Okay, so later articles corrected it. Okay, let's go back. Okay, that threw me off, though. All right, so let's take a look. So he says, so Nehiman Hiretzlo, Ha'ami Nakri Mistrel Lokani. We said that the Goy, so here the Mishnah says, Nakri Shuvah Yisrael Chametzo, if the non-Jew lent money to the Jew, and the Jew uses the Chametz as security, after Pesach, the Chametz is Mutar Bana. But we said a Goy never acquires the rights in the Chametz, even if Pirhino is low. So Lo Kasha, the Gemara says, not a contradiction. Hada Amar Lemi Achshav, Hello Amar Lemi Achshav. In other words, in the Mishnah, we're talking about that the Jew stipulated, here's the additional prat. So in the Mishnah, not only did the Jew bring the Chametz to his Chametz to the non-Jew, but he specifically stipulated that if I default on this loan, this chametz belongs to you, may achshav. That was from now, from before Pesach. And that's why it's mutar. So where do we see that we can distinguish between whether there's a specific stipulation where the person says may achshav or not? He says, Datani, we learn in the Braisa, Nachri shirhin patpurni Eisel Yisrael. If a non-Jew was the borrower and he left this big loaf of bread by the Jew, eno over. So, you know, so even though the chametz is in the Jew's reshus, it's and you get hanah from it after Pesach, you're not transgressing. Vima marlo, but if the non-Jew said to the Jew, he got ticha, it's yours, then he's over. Then the Jew will transgress if he gets hanah from the chametz after Pesach. So Maishna Resha Maishna Sefer, what's the difference between the first case and the second case? El Lav Shruina, Shani Hechad Amar Lei Me'achshav, Lehechlu Amar Lei Me'achshav. And it was Zigaticha, it's yours. That means it's equivalent, it's yours from now. It says Shmamina. So from here we could deduce this. Okay, so it's coming out that the case, let's go back to our case with the Mishnah, with the Chametz, with the Lundig and the whole Zach, means that the borrower in our Mishnah, whoever the borrower was, took the Chametz and gave it to the lender. So those, in each case, here he knew it's the lender, and the borrower stipulated that if I default on the loan, it's yours, may achshav, that this belongs to you, may achshav. So then, and under those circumstances, then it comes out that, depends whether it was a Jew or a non-Jew, but then the Mishnah makes sense. Let's see again what the Mishnah said. The Mishnah says, Nachshu v'yisrael chemtso, harfse mutar bana, right? So if the Jew was borrowing the money, and it was a non-Jewish lender, so it's mutar bana because he defaulted on loan and belonged to the non-Jew. Yisrael shalvat nachri alchem. So if the Jew was the lender, har pesach aser bana, because it came out that the Jew owned the chametz during Pesach. Okay, let me just do another five lines.
So even Rava then can make peace with our Mishnah.
Right, absolutely. let's take a look. Now, Tana Rabbana, we learned the Braisa. Chanut shel Yisrael, Malai shel Yisrael. You have a Jewish-owned store, and the produce in the store was owned by the Jew. And the produce in the store is wine and bread, chametz. He says, "Upole nachrim nichnasim l'sham," and but there are non-Jewish workers in the store. Chametz shem shasham achar pesach asur bana. So the chametz that's there, if he doesn't sell it, obviously it's asur bana. It's chemso shel Yisrael, even though the goyim are working with it. But ain't tzrich lamar ba'achila. Certainly, it's prohibited ba'achila. Chanut shel nachri, if it's a non-Jewish owned store, umlai shel nachri, and the produce all belongs, the merchandise all belongs to the non-Jew, upole Yisrael nachtasim yosim misham, but the workers are Jews, chametz shem shah shamachar pesach mutar banachila, so the chametz that's there afterwards is permissible banachila, means tzrich lomar bana, and certainly bana. Okay, now who's got questions, comments, and thoughts on anything we did tonight so far?
So on the most basic level, you have to work it out that you don't own it on Pesach. And if you have a situation where you do, if you accept it, you have to say, may achshav, it's yours. So you've got to go forward.
Wait, the last part I'm not getting. Repeat again, Fern. Is it repeat?
You need to stipulate if there would be.
But who's the lender? Who's the borrower? So I'm getting lost the lend here. In other words,
it's only a problem.
In the Mishnah's case, like if the lender was a Jew and the non-Jew saying that it's yours, me achshav, so it's going to work out bad for the Jew.
No, right.
You don't want to be in that situation.
We understand that. It's a difficult case.
Okay. As long as everybody understands.
So I don't understand what the big tumult was. I mean, if we today, and we're further from the source of Sinai, we're not so smart. We have very sophisticated document to get rid of our chametz.
Right.
Then why was this an issue? Why would they, when they're in a situation like that, say me'achshav?
This is the way people were lending money. If you lent money this way, that's saying what the halacha is. You know, if you lent money this way, the way our shtar mechir is also based on the Gemara. All right, let's take a look further in the Gemara. All right, now let's take a look next Mishnah. Okay, Matnitin. Chametz shenafla alav ma'polat. You have chametz. Here they translated that like a ruin collapsed on it. In other words, the chametz got buried under a pile of stones. He says harehu kemavuar. That's like it's like this removed. It's been destroyed. Rabban Shimon Gamliel Omer kol shena kelav yachol chapeis acharav. Rushalio says if it's so deep that a dog can't dig for it, then you're off the hook. Otherwise, you're in trouble. You have to dig it out and get rid of the chametz. All right. So the Gemara says, "Am Rav Chista, v'tzarich shivatel b'libo." Rav Chista says, even in the even with the Tana Kama, he still has to do bitul. He's still bitul with it. So in other words, it's mavuar, it's buried, but the person, the owner, has to be mivatel the chametz. Tana Kama chafisat akelav. How deep is it that the dog will search for the chametz? So shoshat vachim. Is Shai here tonight? Shia is there. Okay, Shia, if you're still around, and all I see is like, I don't know, a piece of the cushion or something, but the armrest, but I want to hear about Chafisa de Kelev in a few minutes, okay? So in other words, three tfachim would be like a foot. In other words, a dog could dig down a foot. So, you know, there's a question, like Rahman al-Islam, when somebody dies, so Jews are supposed to, bury over the Aron, right? They're supposed to put the dirt on the Aron. So there's a question. So the way the tour brings it down, you're supposed to put so much dirt that you create a mound over the earth. In other words, like the dirt is filled in and then it's like run over. But there's a question, sometimes there aren't a lot of people there. In other words, Jews should bury the person. Jews should bury Jews, not the non-Jewish workers. But sometimes there aren't so many people to bury and it's difficult. What would be the minimum shear? So someone would say the minimum shear would be like a foot of dirt, because a foot of dirt is like more than chafisat akelav, and that's considered to be like covered over. I remember there's a Rabbi Dworkin, Zikron Levracha, I remember him saying that. All right, anyway, so Amar the Ravacha Bereid Rav Yosef the Ravashi, Hadamar Shmuel, Ksafim Ein Lehem Shmir LeBekarka. So Shmuel said that money is guarded in the karka. It was a secure place to leave the money, the cash, I bury it. So Mibayin Shoshat Fachim Olo. So for that, let's say I'm a shomer or whatever, do I require to bury three tfachim in the ground? So Amar Leh, he said to him, Haka Mishum Recha, but in a Shoshat Fachim. When it comes to chametz, so the aroma, like a dog may come to dig it out, so I need three tfachim deep in the ground. Hata Mishum Echsuya Me'enahu. With the money, I just want to cover it over, nobody finds it. Lobai Shosha, it doesn't require three tfachim. But Kama, how much does it require? Amar Ra from Bar Papa, Misikra, from Bar Papa, from Sikra said one tefach for the money. All right. So Shai, you want to say anything about three tfachim and the dog? Let's hear. You got to unmute yourself, Shia. There you go.
A dog can dig down. I mean, some hunting dogs are trained to go after groundhogs can dig down quite a bit to get a groundhog.
How deep do they dig?
Well, I never measured, but I think a foot to 12 inches in the ballpark for sure.
Yeah. All right. All right, I think there's room for the veterinarian's commentary on Shas, Shaya. You should start gathering all the dapim and all the sugyas. Okay, let's just do the next Mishnah, and then we're going to call it a day soon.
Money, burying the money. What's the case?
It means like this. Like, let's say Reuven gives $1,000 to Shimon. Say, I said, I want you to guard this money or take care of it. And then Shimon has got to go somewhere. So how does he leave it in a secure place? So if he buries it, and he buries it, a tefach down in the ground, that's considered to be, securing it. Okay.
Did the guy whose stuff was buried under the room, did he like make yeish for the stuff?
So that's what he said. Sarishi vatel blibo. You have to make bitul for it. That's what we said.
But if he made yeish, why does he have
no,
to
no,
make
no, 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 no. Again, if he makes bitul, what's the question?
My question was, if he made yeish, if he thought he would never see it again, why does he have to be mevatel it? Because he could possibly see it again?
So, in other words, we're afraid that the chametz is going to become unearthed during Pesach, whereas now it's buried in the ground. Maybe it'll become unearthed. It'll become, you know, so we have to be mevatel it. We have to be mevatel it. Okay. All right, let me do the next Mishnah, and then that'll be it, okay? Okay, so we're 5 lines from the bottom on Lamed Aleph and Lamed Aleph. All right, and we're, I think, like around a quarter way down the Masechta. Didn't that go quickly? It's 31 days, so it's like 4 months. So we did 1 month verse of Sachem. Look at this.
And we didn't need any pictures yet.
Anyway, so again, the Siyum is the week before Pesach. I think it's Sunday, March 22nd. Hopefully this COVID situation will be significantly improved by then. I really hope so.
We're coming up to almost the year since the Siyum HaShas.
Yeah.
It's New Year's Day, that cold day.
Yeah, I remember.
It should have been January 4th.
I remember you in your warm coat there, Michael. I remember. All right, let's take a look further. All right, let's see back on the Gemara. Now you're
and
using
those hand warmers they gave out. Are you allowed to use those on Shabbos? Because I just saw some sort of bargain on them.
I don't know, but now you use that warm coat for other things, you know, for other Torah enterprises, like for Shacharis and Mincha and Mariv. All right, let's take a look. So we're 5 lines to the bottom. So matnitin ha'ochel truman chametz bePesach. So if a person wrongfully consumes truma, so he has to pay a keren v'chomesh. And now the keren v'chomesh, he has to do it in like goods. In other words, so if he wrongfully consumed truma, he's got to take, you know, like the similar food item, and then that's going to be the truma, but he'll do the keren and a chomesh, and he has a fifth on top of it. And we said the fifth is really a fourth, went through the whole thing. But now, chametz on Pesach is valueless, right? Chametz on Pesach is asur bana, so it's worth zero. So when it comes, so if he consumes the truma b'shogeg, that's not a din in tashlumin of value. It's just you have to pay, you know, the same item. That's the thing. But if amazed, That's a value for value type of tashlumin. We'll see in a minute. So manitin ha'ochel truman chametz bePesach b'shogeg. So he ate truman chametz on Pesach. So it was truma and it was chametz. So it could be Rashi says he was shogeg in the truma, then he was truma, even if he was mazed on the chametz. So in other words, he knew it was chametz. He ate the chametz, but he didn't realize it was truma. He says, "B'Pesach, b'Shogeg, mishlam keren v'chomesh." Then he's mechuyev to pay the keren v'chomesh because the keren v'chomesh is not a function of the value; it's just a function of the like item that I have to, you know, compensate for. So that I'm on the hook for it. B'mezid, but if he ate the truma b'mezid, even if the chametz part was shogeg, he's pater mi tashlumin and they ate him. So then he's pater from tashlumin; he doesn't owe any money. Because, in other words, b'mezid, it's you're paying back the value of it if it's b'mezid. So b'mezid, it has no value because it's chametz on Pesach. And even if it was truma t'meah, and where normally he would b'mezid, he would pay d'mei eitzim, like the value to burn it, because truma t'meah is only, the only value is fuel. He's patra from that as well. All right, let me just do a few lines in the Gemara.
Can I ask the question?
Okay.
Why is there not, if you're getting karet for eating the chametz, then why isn't it kum le mitzarab aminei?
So,
no, in the mazid case, the first case.
The first case was shogeg, the second case was mazid, right?
Okay, but it should apply in one of the cases, no?
Wait a second. So, b'mazid, it would be chiv karet. If he's right. Chametz, but that he's pater from Tishlumen, so it's not really, it's really.
It's the question on the one where he needs to pay the Tishlumen.
In other words, your question is like this: if you ate the Trumas Chametz, the Pesach b'Shogeg, even though you were mazed for the Chametz, you still pay the Keren v'Chomesh. So you're
that's
saying,
my question.
That's the question. So you're saying that right. That should be Kim Leibed Rabamina, you want to say.
Right.
That should be Kim Leibed Rabamina. All right, let me take it under advisement with that, okay? Let me take that under advisement. All right, now.
carat counts as coming down Amar Milah?
Well, that's one issue. I don't know if it's a Dabar Muskam that carat does work with the Kim Levi Rabbi Minei, but I think according to some opinions it might. That's why I have to look into. Okay, let me hold off. Okay, so let me just do two lines from the bottom, the Gemara. So Tanana Tam, we learn the Mishnah Masechet Trumot. Ha'ochel trum b'shogeg, if a person consumes trum b'shogeg, b'shalim keren v'chomesh, he pays back the principal and a chomesh, the fifth. Echad ha'ochel, whether you eat the truma, v'echad ha'shote, if you drink the truma, and then the top line, lam bezim and aleph, v'echad ha'sach, or you anoint yourself with the truma, then maybe oil. Echad truma t'meya, v'echad truma t'hora, whether it's truma t'meya or truma t'hora, truma t'meya, it can never be eaten, but it could be burnt. He says, m'shalim chomesh, your person pays back a chomesh, but chumsha the chumsha. And if he then, consumes the chomesh gets a din of truma, so he's got to pay a chomesh on the chomesh if he would wrongfully eat the chomesh. Okay, so we'll see more tomorrow with this. Okay, I think this is going to be it for tonight. All right, any other questions, comments, thoughts? Okay, let me end the recording.
Went very quickly tonight.